It is not a statement that we don't readily understand and live every day to say that we are living in challenging times. Our faith is being tested. Our faith is being challenged. There are individuals who were, if they had their way, they'd want to change us. They'd want to change the way we live. They'd want to change what we believe. They'd want to change what we love. They'd want to change what we think. They'd want to change what we do. This is true of every single one of us. It seems even more true and more real for those who are young. That our world, our society, the people that are around us seem to be wanting to change what our young people think, what they believe, what they have been taught, what they love, into something warped into the image of the devil. There was a time when this happened in Bible time, and really when I say that, this happened all throughout Bible times, but there's one that I'm thinking about tonight. There was a time when this happened in the Bible in the life of a young man named Daniel. And what I want to do tonight is I want you to get your Bibles and go to Daniel chapter 1. Because we're just going to kind of park ourselves there in Daniel chapter 1 and see a young man living the same thing that I just said about what we're dealing with today, living in a culture, living in a time that's challenging, where faith is being challenged and tested, and people are wanting to change what you think and believe and do. That happened in the life of Daniel. It happened in the life of him at a very young age. And so what I want to do tonight is something that we have not done, and I went back and looked. It's been since 2019 since we had what we call an IMAP lesson. And what this is what it says. It's an inspired message that has an abiding purpose. We've done several of these over the years, but I can't believe it's been over 4 years since we've had one. I just want us to look at this account in the Bible. And I want to tell this Bible story. And I want us, it doesn't matter how old or how young we are, I want us to take our minds back into what happened in the life of Daniel. I want us to imagine that we were there with Daniel, that we experienced what Daniel experienced in this chapter. And as we go through this, I want you to think, what would I have done if I was in that place? This is an inspired message, not David's words, the words that are in the Bible. But it happened so long ago. Does it have any relevance still for us today? It still has very much an abiding purpose. So are you there in Daniel chapter 1? We're going to come back and review these verses, but I just want you to think about what happens. Before, in the books, in the chapters, in the history leading up to this, God's people had turned from God and were worshiping idols. We talked about that this morning. God's people who knew better were bowing down to things that they had made. And if you've got children here tonight, this is a ready-made lesson for them to be paying attention to. We're going to have pictures up on the screen for the first part of the sermon, ready-made for them to watch. God's people were worshiping idols. Is that a big deal? Did God say, that's not that big of a deal, I'll just let that slide? They were more interested in these things they had made with their own hands than they were in worshiping their own God. Was God going to let it go? Was God going to say, well, that's all right. You know, they'll come around eventually. Well, God kept trying. He kept sending prophet after prophet to try to turn them around, but they wouldn't. And so they wouldn't listen to these prophets. You can see their reaction as these prophets came to speak to the people. What were the people doing? Oh, we don't want to have anything to do with you. We're not interested in anything that these prophets have to say. Can you imagine being a prophet in that day? Do you remember when God chose his prophets, he would even warn them, they're not going to listen to you. Wouldn't that be fun? You're going to be my prophet. I'm going to send you to my people. I'm going to give you the words to speak. But when you get over there, they won't listen to you. Oh, great. Sign me up. That sounds like a great gig. They won't care what I have to say. But that was what they were walking into. And when the people would not listen, eventually God sent the enemy armies, the enemy nations to come and to conquer his people. You see, sin has consequences. And when you turn away from God, that's going to have some kind of consequence. And so in this particular account that we're looking at, the Babylonian army is going to come up against the city of Jerusalem. God describes these individuals, this army, this nation, as His. It's not. This is a pagan nation, but He's using them to accomplish His purpose. Why? Because His people don't want to have anything to do with Him anymore. So the people of Jerusalem could look out and they saw that their city of Jerusalem was besieged. It's surrounded. There's this nation that's closing them off. And this is about the year 606 BC when they first come up against them. They come in and they attack God's people. And they're going to come back in 597 and do it again. They're going to come back in about 586 and they're going to do it again. But this is the first time that God's people are under attack in this southern kingdom by the enemy. And the Babylonians carry off the people of God. And you can see where they're headed. They're headed over here to Babylon. They're over here in Jerusalem. The shortest route would be what? Well, it'd be straight east. But you're not going to go across that. That's desert land. And so they traveled up what we would think of, what you were taught about, the Fertile Crescent back in school. They would travel up there and down the Euphrates River. 900 miles from Jerusalem. We look at it and we think, okay, that's just from here over to Lake Okeechobee or something. It's not. It's 900 miles. And how are they traveling? They got an Uber driver. How are they traveling? They have a private Learjet. How are they traveling? Would you like to walk from here to Richmond, Virginia? Would you like to just walk? How would you like to ride a camel from here to Richmond? Or if that doesn't translate for you, how would you like to have your family riding on camel or just walking from here to Kentucky, just north of Nashville? Nashville's about 830 miles. Go north of that, get in Kentucky, and you're transporting your family on foot to north of Nashville. Wouldn't your family just love that? But no, it's not a family vacation. You're being taken by the enemy into their land. You're being forced to walk 900 miles, and they took some of the best things out of the temple. They're not only taking God's people, they're taking the goods, they're taking the gold from the temple, and they're going to take it with them over to Babylon and put it in their own coffers, in their own temples. What would be going through your mind for 900 miles? In Ezra's day, Ezra traveled from Babylon back to Jerusalem. It took him 4 months. 4 months. What would be going through your mind for those weeks and months as you were traveling as a prisoner of war to go to Babylon? And so you know who some of those guys are. This looks like him, right? Here's Daniel, all right? At least from later pictures, we're going to know that's Daniel. So I'm just going to say that this is Hananiah, who knows? This is Mishael, and this is Azariah. We're going to see them in a later picture. They're 14, 15, 16 years old. We think about Daniel. We might think about him later on as a statesman, as an older individual. They're 14, 15, 16 years old. They're not even old enough to go to war, as it were, and yet they are now prisoners of war, being taken from their home where they grew up, and now they're bound as prisoners to go to a new land. What would be going through your mind if you're one of these guys? Well, this isn't fair. Can you imagine, over a period of 4 months, can you imagine how many times they asked, "Are we almost there? Are we almost there?" Did your kids ever ask you that? When you're going on a car ride, are we almost there? They don't have to ask anymore because they've got their own phone and their own GPS, right? They know exactly how far it is now. But when we drove from here to Alaska back in 1982 and 1985, that 5,000 miles one-way trip, you know how many times me and my sisters asked? My sisters and I asked, are we almost there yet? Zero, because my dad taught us, you don't ask that question. It's going to take us a week to get there and you stay quiet. Can you imagine? 4 months to get there. But they arrive in this new place. They arrive in this new place and they don't know where anything is. Everything looks different. Everybody talks differently. Everything smells differently. They eat differently. Everything is different about this. But Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were among some of those young men that were selected. The king told them, go out, and I want you to select from these prisoners of war the choice young men. The ones who are good looking. All right, so if you were ugly, good job. You weren't selected. The ones who are smart, if you were dumb, you're not selected. Get the good looking ones, get the smart ones, get the skilled ones, and bring them in. And we're going to put them through a 3-year training program. 3-year training program in order that they might come and serve the king after those 3 years. And so Daniel and his three friends are brought in, and as part of their training, they're going to be taught the literature of the land. As part of their training, they're going to be taught the language of the land. As part of their training, they are given the king's delicacies and the king's wine. And Daniel says, we're not going to eat that. Really? Who are you? Who are you to say what you're going to do and what you're not going to do, young man? How many times did you tell your children, you're going to eat the food on your plate? They're starving children. What did they say? Who's Daniel to think he's got a right to resist what he's being told to do? But what does Daniel know? There's something about this food and wine that's not right in the eyes of God. We're not given all the details about that. But there's something about it. He says, this will defile me in the eyes of God. And whatever it was, he says, nope, count me out. What do you mean, count me out? You can't say that. You're a prisoner of war. You're in this 3-year training program. You have to eat what's put in front of you. And so he says to the chief of the eunuchs, this man who puts the food before them, he says, we're not going to eat it. He just says, there's got to be something else because we're not going to eat this. Well, the chief of the eunuchs wasn't really impressed with that, because the chief of the eunuchs said, you know what? I understand what you're saying, but, I could get in trouble. If you don't eat what is put in front of you, I could be the one that gets in trouble, and that's just not going to happen. And so he wasn't going to change anything. And so instead of the chief of the eunuchs, Daniel kind of worked his way down. He didn't work his way up. He kind of worked his way down. And he went to kind of the overseer, the guard who was in charge of him and his friends. And he goes to this man and says, okay, look, there's got to be some solution here. Here's what we want to do. Instead of this food, just give me and my friends vegetables and water. Just give it to us for 10 days. And after 10 days, come and examine us and see if we're not better than the rest of these guys after 10 days. Can you imagine being Daniel? He's 14, 15, 16 years old. Who's he? No, the first guy wouldn't listen. So he comes up with a solution, says, put us to the test. Let us see if this doesn't work out. And so you know what happens. After 10 days, how did they look? After 10 days, they looked better. I mean, they were already good looking is what chapter 1 tells, but they looked better than all of the other young men who had been handpicked for this. How's that? Just 10 days? I mean, what if you could get that kind? What if you got that kind of eating program in 10 days? You would be better looking than anybody else, in the nation. Would you want that kind of a diet? And so the king, after those 3 years, remember they're in a 3-year training program. After 3 years, the king interviews. He calls all of these guys in before him. And this is the part of the chapter that Trey read for us a little while ago. The king calls them all in. And it's not just the chief of the eunuchs. It's not just his guard now that sees this. Now the king sees that these 4 young men, they're high above anybody else. Not just in how they look. He recognizes these young men are better off than anybody else in his kingdom. And so they are elevated. They're given positions of authority in a foreign land. How did all of that happen? All of that happened because of the God that those 4 young men served. And all of that happened because those 4 young men put their faith in God. So now that we've looked at that, and now that we've seen what happens in this chapter, I want us to see what kind of application we can make. What do we see about Daniel's faith in Daniel chapter 1? There's a lot that we see, and I've got Daniel up here, and you could put Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up there just as easy with him, but it's Daniel's name that appears more in this chapter. He seems to be the leader among those four. But I want us to see very quickly three things about his faith. And I don't care if you're 14, 15, or 16, or if you're 40, or 50, or 60, or some other decade in between or above, this has something for every one of us. What do we see about Daniel's faith? Number one, Daniel's faith was challenged. What happens in Daniel chapter 1? How is his faith challenged? Look in verse 4. Daniel chapter 1, verse 4. These young men are brought in, and the master of the eunuchs is told to bring in some of the children of Israel in verse 3, some of the king's descendants, some of the nobles. And here's how they're described in verse 4. Young men in whom there is no blemish, but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. They're going to be taught a new life. They're going to be taught a new history. They are going to be indoctrinated into the life and the understanding and who it is to be a Babylonian. Is this happening today? Are our children being indoctrinated with certain things? I'm not talking about in school. I'm just talking about in life. Turn on the television, and are children being taught things that are not right? Are they learning things on television shows that are not biblically accurate, not accurate, period, to life? Are they being indoctrinated? Are there things that our children are being taught today that fit some certain agenda that somebody's trying to push? Are there certain movies that are produced by a company that used to be child-friendly that you have to check out these movies first before you take your children to see a rated G movie to see, are they trying to push some agenda in this movie? Yeah. It's happening all around us. No different than what was happening back then. Daniel's faith was being challenged. It's no different. God warned us that people were going to leave the faith today. God warned us that things were going to happen today that would cause people to leave. And so look in verse 5. It's not just what they're being taught. The king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank. And what happens? Here's the best that we have to offer. We want you to eat this. We want you to drink this. And in my mind, everybody else is doing it. Here, and I don't know that picture of the men sitting around a table was accurate. You know, how did they serve them the food? But these four young men were not the only young men who are in this training program. There's other young men in this training program. So they're all sitting around a table, as it were. They're all sitting in the same vicinity, as it were. And everybody's given the food, everybody's given the wine, and here you go. And everybody else is eating it. Everybody else is drinking it. And what do these four young men say? You think it was easy for them to say anything? Wouldn't it have been easier just to go along with what everybody... Well, do you think maybe there were some Israelite young men who were going along with it? We know about these four. You think there were some Israelite young men, maybe some of their friends, who were like, well, okay, I guess we'll do this. Is it hard to stand up for what's right when even your friends are doing what's wrong? Their faith is being challenged. Judges chapter 21, verse 25 says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everybody did what was right where? In his own eyes. That's what's happening here. How would you like to be one of these young men? Looking around that table, as it were. Do we say anything? Do we not say anything? Do we just eat it? It's just food. What's it? Do you think they went back? I don't think they did. I think these four young men saw what was going on, but still, how hard would that be for them to face? And then you get down to verse 6. Not only are they being indoctrinated with new ideas, not only are they being forced, or at least forced, to try to eat different food. Verse 6 says, "Now from among those, the sons of Judah, were Daniel," and we don't recognize these next three very readily, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We don't recognize those names as readily, but each of those names, each of those four names, is tied to their God. Daniel and Mishael, their names are tied to their God. Hananiah and Azariah is tied to their God. But now we're going to change your names. To them, the chief of the eunuchs gave names in verse 7. He gave Daniel the name of Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, he called him Shadrach. To Mishael, he called him Meshach. And to Azariah, he called him Abednego. It's not just like change. Oh, we're not going to call you David anymore. We're going to call you Bob. Okay, what does that mean? They were changing what their names meant. Their names meant something before. Their names were tied to their God. Now we're going to give you names that are tied to our gods. We're going to change who you are. We're going to change the way you think. We're going to change your religion. We're going to change your gods. You're going to be a whole different person after these 3 years. Can you imagine? They weren't just going to school. They're going to be changed. They're going to be morphed and poured into the mold of what it means to be a Chaldean, to be a Babylonian. You have anybody who calls you names? Anybody call you names that are not nice? Was Jesus ever called names? Jesus was called names. Jesus was called a sinner in John chapter 9. We know this sinner. Hey, Jesus? You're calling Jesus a sinner? What in the world? Jesus was called Beelzebub. What? Jesus? You remember, what about Elijah back in 1 Kings chapter 18? Remember what Ahab called Elijah? Oh, you troubler of Israel. Was he the troubler? No, and that's what Elijah said. Not me, you, buddy. Bounces off of me and sticks to you. So it's not that it's, are people going to call us names? Yeah. Is that fun? Oh, you're one of those Bible-thumping people. You're one of those Bible-believing people. You're one of those church people, aren't you? They're going to call us names, whatever it may be. Yep, that's what I am. That's who I am. It's not going to change. I want you to imagine being one of these young men and how much their faith was tested. What would you do? Would it be easy just kind of, do I speak up? Do I say anything? What did these young men do? As you go through and read about everything that they faced. I mean, is chapter 3 not one of your favorite stories about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing before that 90-foot-tall golden idol? Bow down to this. Everybody else is. Not us. Their faith was challenged. But when Daniel's faith was challenged, we begin in verse 8, and we see that while it's challenged, his faith was committed. Daniel was not going to budge. I love verse 8. I love the first word, and I don't know if it's the first word in every translation because I didn't check them today, but I love the first eight, at least in the New King, first verse in verse 8 in the New King James, maybe in other translations, is the word but. I love it when a verse starts with the word but. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to change your language. We're going to teach you this literature. We're going to teach you this. We're going to indoctrinate you. We're going to change what you eat. We're going to change your gods. We're going to change your worship. We're going to change your name. Okay, but what does that say? Not over here. It's not going to work on us. It's not going to work for us. But Daniel purposed in his heart. Daniel was determined that he was not going to sin. He was determined that he was not going to compromise what he believed, and he was proactive in this. Think about this. He's 900 miles away from home. Are you a different person when you're not at home? You go over to your friend's house, maybe I'm a little bit different. When you're at school, do you act differently? When you go on vacation, nobody knows me out here. Nobody knows if I go to church or don't go to church. Nobody knows if I talk this way or don't talk this way. I can be anybody out here. They're 900 miles away from home. They're prisoners. We can act any way that we want. But we're going to act the way that we were raised. We're going to behave the way that would honor our God. And I don't believe, because of the word purposed here, I don't believe that this was a decision that Daniel made right then and there. I don't think that Daniel was like, oh, well, what am I going to do here? The fact that it says Daniel purposed in his heart says that Daniel had made that decision 900 miles ago. Daniel had made that decision years ago. And so when that food and that wine is put down in front of him, it wasn't that Daniel needed to make a decision then, what am I going to do? He had already made that decision. And he had been living his life on that decision. I don't know if it was Gus Nichols or his son Hardiman Nichols or which Nichols it was who made the statement that when he gets up on Sunday mornings, he doesn't have to decide if he's going to church or not. He said, I made that decision 50 years ago. What's the deal? I'm living the life that I already determined that I'm going to live, and it's for God and it's not for me. And that's what Daniel and his friends are. I already made that decision. I don't have to decide whether I'm going to eat something that's going to defile me or drink wine that's going to defile me. I've already purposed in my heart that I'm going to serve my God. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 5, Paul says, we did not yield even for an hour. Neither did Daniel. Not even for a meal. Not going to yield. Does that need to be us? Not giving in, even for a moment, even for something. Would it have been easier to just go ahead and drink? Yeah, it would have been easier. Wouldn't have drawn attention to himself at all. But that is not what he was going to do. He was not going to defile himself with anything that was outside of what God wanted him to do. Number two, look at the rest of verse 8. Daniel respectfully made a request to be excluded. He purposed in his heart, verse 8, that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine in which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Do you see him being disrespectful? Do you see him throwing, I'm not going to eat this. Get this garbage out of my face. Is that what you picture? No. You know what? We'd rather not eat this. Do you picture a respectful young man, young men, saying, this is not what we're going to do? Does that draw attention to him? I mean, all of a sudden, maybe nobody was paying attention to Daniel and his friends because they're just one among the group, right? I mean, everybody's here, everybody's doing this. But as soon as you step out and stand up and stand different, all of a sudden the attention, woo, right on you. Who's this guy? What's he doing? What's wrong with him? We're not going to eat this. But he did it. My reading of the verse, he did it respectfully. He's not being arrogant. He's not being ugly. He's being respectful to this man of authority and saying, we need something else. Requested not to eat that which would defile. Is that something we can do? If we get in a situation where things are not going in the right direction, we get around people that are doing things that we know we shouldn't do, is it okay for us to speak up respectfully? What if it's a position of authority? What if a teacher at school? What if it's somebody who says, you know, on this test, you have to put this answer or you're going to fail this class? Is it okay for us to be respectful? Not saying ugly. Is it okay for us to be respectful and say, I'm not going to change what I believe for you. I'm not going to change what I know is right for you. This is what God says, and I'm not ashamed of what God says. Isn't that what the apostles did, Peter and John did in Acts chapter 4? When they're arrested and told, you stop preaching in Acts 4 and verse 19, Peter says, you know what? Whether it's right in the sight of God for us to listen to you, you all figure that out. If you think we ought to be doing different, you all have a committee on it. You have a committee meeting. You plan all of these agendas. You sit down and you come up with all these ideas on your own. But guess what? After you're done with your meetings and you've made your decisions, we're still here. And we're still standing where we are, and we're not going to change. Were they respectful in that? We can be. But we saw and we noted this as we came through this, that the chief of the eunuchs, he says in verse 10, I fear my Lord the King. Isn't that something? He feared his Lord the King more than he feared the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings, who Daniel feared. Does that tell us something? Who should we fear? Should we fear more our government? Should we fear more our president, our governor, our mayor, our whoever, or fear the King of Kings?
Lord of Lords. And so that is in verse 11 is where Daniel goes to the steward, the overseer, the guard that's over him and his friends. And look at what he says in verse 12. Please test your servants. He's respectful. He's courageous. Please test your servants for 10 days, verse 12. Let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So first he requests not to do it. And when that's denied, he says, okay, let me offer an alternative. And not just courageously and respectfully offer an alternative. Daniel puts himself out on the line. He says, you hold me accountable. Here's my alternative to what you're saying. And, you know, the king wants this, and we'll try to meet the king's standards to what, you know, to a certain level. But we're not going to defile ourselves. We're not going to go against God. So how about we do this, and then you come and hold us accountable? Is that bold? Is that courageous? Did Daniel know what he was going to look like after 10 days? Well, his faith in God told him what he knew. But he's just saying, you know what? How about we do this, and then you come and see, you come and check with me. You come and see how things are. That's not putting your God on the line. That's putting you on the line. Could we do that? Stand up for what we believe. Offer courageously and respectfully an alternative that says, you know what? How about we do this? And how about we see if this, whatever it is, doesn't work out better than what you want? Is that something we can do? Are you in a workplace environment that they ask of you things that a Christian should not do? Is it okay for you to say, how about we do this instead? And you come up with some alternative that maybe can meet the same goals, but doesn't cause you to compromise your faith. And how about we see if this doesn't actually work better than what you are involved in? You're in a workplace where they want you to lie, maybe lie to the customer, maybe lie to certain, you know, maybe fudge the numbers here or change this over here to help the business. Well, how about we just do it this way? And let's see if this doesn't work out better in the long run. Could it possibly cause you to lose your job? Maybe. What's more important? Standing up for our principles, for our beliefs, for our faith, or keeping our job? You get to chapter 3, what was more important to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Standing up for their principles, standing up for their beliefs, standing up for their faith, or their own lives? It's all right. Throw us in the fiery furnace. That'll be okay. Final thing I want us to see about their faith being committed is the fact that they trusted God. And you see this throughout this. But I want you to see in verse 9, where it says, now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. That God was involved in what was happening. And when he says down in verse 12, why don't you just wait and why don't you compare us with these other men as it were, and why don't you just see which of us looks better at the end? What's he doing? Does he know? Well, if I eat this in 10 days, I'm going to look better than these guys. He's putting his trust in God. He's got confidence that God's way is better than my way. And if I just do God's way, it's all going to work out for the better. Isn't that what Joseph said in Genesis chapter 50 to his brothers? You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. You know what? This was your plan, but God worked this out for the better. Do we have that kind of faith in God? This is what people want me to do. Here's what they're testing my faith. They want to change what I think and believe and do. And okay, that's them. But my God's going to take care of me. Trust in the Lord with how much of your heart? Proverbs 3 and verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart. Lean not on what? Your own understanding. In all of your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. Well, you know, that verse is 3,000 years old. It doesn't have anything to do with us, right? Wrong. Got everything to do with us. Daniel's faith was challenged, and his faith met the challenge. His faith was dug in, committed, purposed, determined to serve God. And what we see in the rest of the chapter is that his faith was rewarded. That his faith that he had in God was confirmed, that it was true, that it was solid, that it was just as loyal as it as he thought it to be. And what I want you to see again are four things here, but all of this is about God. His faith was confirmed in his God because God was with Daniel. God was with Daniel and his friends. We already saw all in verse 9. God had brought Daniel into the favor and the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. After Daniel says, put us to the test, look at verse 15. At the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. These other guys were eating better than Daniel and his friends, but Daniel and his friends' appearance was better than theirs. Thus the steward, verse 16, took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink, and he gave them only vegetables. This has worked out. Look in verse 17. As for these young men, God. You see the word God in verse 17? As for the young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. Wait a minute. I thought the Babylonians were going to teach them in literature and wisdom. God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. God was with Daniel. Is God still with you the same way he was with Daniel? Is that the same God? Hebrews chapter 13, verse 6. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Do you have that verse written upon your heart? The Lord, he's my helper. That's all that matters. That is a quotation from Psalm 118. But over in Psalm 118 and verse 6, it doesn't exactly say, the Lord is my helper. It says over there, I like this, the Lord is on my side. Do you have that kind of faith? The Lord is on my side. And when the Lord is on my side and I'm on his side, guess what the Lord's going to do? He's going to take care of me. He's going to help me. Psalm 146 and verse 5 says, happy is he who has the God of Jacob as his helper. Are you happy? If God is your helper, you ought to be happy. Nothing to fear. You think Daniel was happy sitting there challenging what was happening? Bring it on. God's my helper. I don't know how he's going to get me through this. That's okay. Doesn't matter. He'll get me through this. His faith was confirmed. God took care of him. It was proven in this, as we saw in verse 15, that God's way is superior to man's way. Well, these guys did it the king's way, and these four young men did it God's way. Which of these ways was better? The steward didn't have to think long to figure out which way was better. Yeah, God's way was better. Guess what today? God's way is better every time. Isaiah 55 is where God says, are not my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts higher than your thoughts? They're better. Why do we want to challenge them? Why do we want to question them? We just need to know that it's always right to do right. And when I do right, that's the best way to go. It will never fail. People might think it fails. People might think it's wrong. That's okay. That doesn't matter. God knows. And I need to know. And it will be proven over and over that God's way is superior. And not just God's way, but God's people. God's people are proven in this account to be of a higher caliber than anybody else. Look at the verses that were read. Look in verse 18. Not only verse 17 did God give all of these things to these four young men. Verse 18. Now at the end of the days, the king had said that they should be brought in. This is at the end of the 3 years. That's the days that's being talked about in verse 18. Remember, 3-year training program? So now after 3 years, they're brought before the king after this training program. So when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. The king interviewed them. I want you to see the word all in these verses. You like to mark in your Bible? I want you to see the word all in these verses beginning in verse 19. The king interviewed them. And among them all of these young men who had been brought in from all of these other places, including Israel, and were involved in this 3-year training program, among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. That was their purpose in this training program, was to get them ready to serve before the king. But they did it God's way. And it was proven that there was nobody like them. Verse 20, and in all matters. Do you see it the second time? In all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better. How do you measure that? Well, this guy over here is 3 times better. This one's 6 times. Why, this guy's 10. How do you measure that? The purpose there is not a literal measurement. It is to show a number of perfection that says you are completely better than anybody else. You're of a higher caliber. Why? Because you belong to God. They were proven to be 10 times better than, do you see this again? All the magicians and astrologers who were in all of his realm. Do you have the word all 4 times in those verses? God's people were proven to be of a higher caliber. Not because of them. Not because of them. Because of God. In Acts 4 and verse 13, the Sanhedrin, I'll get there in a minute, the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council, recognized something about Peter and John. And verse 13 of Acts 4 says, they realized that these men had been with Jesus. How do you know they've been with Jesus? They got a suntan because they're facing the light of the world all this time? How do you know they've been with Jesus all this time? Something different about them. They're on a higher plane than anybody else. Is that us? Do people see us? I'm not talking about arrogance. I'm not talking about that we're better than. I'm not saying any of that. We're of a different caliber because we belong to the God of heaven. That ought to make us different in the way that we live, in the way that people see us. And God will reward us for it. But as we close this, the last thing I want you to see is that God is the focus of this whole thing. We spent this time talking about Daniel and his 3 friends. And we put the focus on them and look at their great faith. But Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they would say, it's not us. It's God. And so you see it. You see in verse 2, the Lord gave Jehoiakim. And so it starts with what the Lord had done and what the Lord was doing. You saw it in verse 9 that God had brought Daniel into favor. You saw it in verse 17 that God gave them knowledge and skill. It was all about what God was doing, not about what these boys were doing. As we think about our lives, let's not make it about us. Not about us. Well, look at my faith. Look at how great it is. I'm of a different caliber than everybody else. Has nothing to do with me. Has everything to do with God. Paul in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 20, he says, whether I live or whether I die, I'm going to magnify Christ in my life. What's he saying? It's not about me. And even if I die, even in my death, I'm going to magnify Christ because it's all about him. And when we get that in our heads and our hearts and we say it's all about him, we can have a faith like Daniel. It'll be challenged. That's okay. Faith being challenged just makes it stronger. Because when that faith is committed to God, when it's purposed that it's not going to defile who we are, but it's going to serve God with all of our hearts, when we make that determination, it's God who will confirm our faith to be exactly what he wants it to be. Are you a child of God tonight? Are you in the same family that Daniel was a part of, the family of God? Are you serving that same God? Are you serving him faithfully? If you're not a Christian tonight, the Bible tells us in the New Testament that in order to become a Christian, we need to believe that Jesus is the Son of God, to repent of the wrong that's in our life, make up our mind, I want to stop doing what's wrong, start doing what's right. Confess the faith that's in our heart and be baptized so that at that moment, the blood of Jesus can wash away every sin we've committed. The Lord can add us to his church. We can have our name registered in heaven and we can serve him faithfully. No matter what everybody else is doing around us, no matter what challenges come to us, we just keep on keeping on. And we purpose in our heart, I'm going to serve the Lord for the rest of my life. Where are you in your relationship with the Lord tonight? If you need to get your life right with him, why don't you do it right now? As together we stand and sing.